Welcome to You Speaks Out. I'm the show's producer, Dan Roberts. Today we will hear an interview with educator Ralph Cantor, conducted by Maddie and Colton of Laytonville High School. Ralph made presentations called Marijuana and the Adolescent Brain to all the classes at Laytonville High School and then led a public forum on the topic to an enthusiastic audience. This interview was after the school presentations and before the public forum. These events were sponsored by Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project, which may be reached at 707-984-8089. The first voice you are about to hear is Ralph Cantor.
Well, I'm 69, so I went to a maritime academy, like California Maritime, only it's New York Maritime. And so I sailed on ships and stuff. And so I wasn't really into the 60s, you know, right away. But when I started, I graduated college in 66. And when I started sailing, that was just a time when all this was happening. And, you know, the first time somebody got me high, I was living in Greenwich Village. And I loved it, you know. And so I just started to get high a lot and traveling around the world, you know, I was looking for marijuana and stuff. And I was also, then I used to get seasick a lot. So finally in the end of 69, even though I had sailed to Vietnam, I'd never been there as a soldier. I didn't want to fight there. And I knew I couldn't sail anymore. I just couldn't handle it. So I started teaching in the South Bronx where I grew up. And I was teaching math and science. And not only was I smoking weed, I was watching weed with the kids too, you know. And then I came out here in 71 in Berkeley. And I was teaching math. Kid comes up to me and says, "Mr. Cantor, can I get into your math class after lunch? Because if I can get into your math class after lunch, I can smoke a doobie over lunchtime and I can learn better." And I said, "You got to be kidding me. You're going to come to my class stoned and you can learn better?" The kid says, "Absolutely." And so I got into it. What is this kid thinking and what is he doing? I began to, and then I saw from his point of view, you know, as I began to learn about it, you know, it hit his cerebellum and he wasn't ADD for a while. So he could finally chill in the class. Mm-hmm. It fired off some dopamine. So school wasn't so bad now with some dopamine, you know. And this whole hippocampus thing that I was teaching, which has to do with memory and pulling up from memory. And, you know, and when you interrupt that, things can taste good and seem different because you're like seeing it for the first time. But at the same time, it also not only interferes with pulling up from memory, but putting memory in. Mm-hmm. And so, but from his point of view, man, it made the twos and the threes really deep. Yeah. and interesting. You know what I mean? So from him, you know, he's chilling, he's feeling good, and he's fascinated by whatever is being taught up there. So I saw from his point of view why he felt like he learned better. Right. But it was through that I started to really learn about weed. And then in 76, after teaching math and science for a bunch of years, I spent 16 days with a famous psychologist, Carl Rogers. Was his name. And that really moved me and brought me into the counseling field. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school and became a school counselor. That's when I really learned more about the weed thing. And I started to run groups with kids and listen to that.
In Berkeley?
In Albany, at the continuation school in Albany and at Albany High. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, they hired me as an administrator at the county office to be responsible for drug and violence prevention. And now, when I was responsible for drug and violence prevention, I really needed to get into it. Right. So I got into it, but the thing was that I was really disappointed in the way it was being taught. It really wasn't reaching kids very much at all, you know. And so that's what got me, how are we going to reach kids here? How are we going to get more effective with teaching? And so at the county office, I started training people and on how to do drug education. And that eventually, and then I retired 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now people are saying, come and do it, you know. And I mean, what I'm interested in more is training other people to do it so that they can I mean, the whole idea to me in drug education is being able to reach kids.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I've heard people, oh, I told him that doesn't pay attention, then that's his problem.
Don't
do that. Yeah. But that as a teacher, that's really my problem as a teacher. I need to figure out how to reach kids. So a lot of the teaching that I'm doing, even though it seems kind of scientific and I do a lot of biology, you know, you saw with the synapses and, you know, all that stuff, really...
that helped me understand more about it. It was really helpful. It was very helpful when you drew it out on the board.
Yeah.
It made me understand, and I'm sure it helped the freshmen as
right.
well.
Yeah.
Understand how it works.
Right. And through the biology, it gives you a kind of a visual to hook into some of the concepts that are there, you know. So, and when you're teaching it more from the biology standpoint, it's not laden with opinion and judgment and morality and everything. It's just this is the way the drug works, you know. And in a way, what I'm doing is trying to arrive at a place that I think sex education has already arrived at, you know. I think once HIV hit, sex education changed. Then they had to stop playing around. We got to get down to the nitty gritty here because it's life and death, you know, we're talking about. And so that's when sex education, I thought, really started to get real, you know. And there isn't a huge imperative around drug education. So I don't see drug education as being particularly real, you know. And so people are kind of locked into either teaching how good it is or how bad it is, you know, instead of just teaching about the drug. And so I'm kind of doing what they do in sex education, which is just, I'm here to do drug education, not drug propaganda, drug education.
And I liked today when you mentioned that you're not bashing on marijuana. Because
right.
A lot of the kids, if you say that, like, you shouldn't do this, like, mm-hmm. never, they want to try it. And mm-hmm. it kind of made them be, it made me feel like this is cool because we're getting advice and not
yeah.
just, like, information about it. It's, like, advice about it and about getting your life together, you know, like figuring out what sets your dopamine.
Yes.
And stuff.
Oh, good. That's what I was shooting for. Was the dopamine thing?
Yeah, that was really helpful. I'm sure. Well, it was me. I'm sure it was for the freshmen because they weren't listening to someone who was against marijuana if they do it,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't someone against it. So like, oh, I shouldn't listen to them. It was like more
right.
interesting because they were talking. Or they were listening to someone talk about just about how it works instead of why it's bad for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Great. That's the idea, and that is what I'm trying to do. You know, is just do some education about it, and you know, I mean, it's not just as a teaching technique. I think marijuana has a lot to offer. Actually, I'm not anti-marijuana at all. The thing about it for me, though, is I really make a distinction between an adolescent brain and an adult brain. That's the difference. A lot of people in the cannabis movement don't see what we see in high schools, you know, where and particularly on the kids that are more marginalized, that are more kind of not really connected with the schools. Smoking weed really affects them differently. And the brain is different. There, I mean, one thing that I'm going to say tonight that I didn't say in school because I didn't think it was appropriate for the kids, because it feels demeaning in some way. But the truth is that a teenager is not totally up in the prefrontal cortex. You know, they're not, and I don't like to say that, you know, because it feels demeaning, but in some ways, I mean, there's a bunch of people in the community that are using drugs, you know, that smoke weed or drink alcohol or whatever it is that they're doing. But it requires a level of sophistication to really have drugs in your life. It's not simple. And I just don't feel that kids are at that level of sophistication yet to be able to really handle that. But I'm not anti-marijuana. I just, you know, for the teenagers, their brain is developing.
Yeah.
And so my big message for you guys, which I'm really glad that you got, was get a life.
Yeah.
you know, find out what it is that fires off dopamine for you.
I'm going to be smoking weed and getting the dopamine off the weed the whole life.
Yeah.
I want them to...
I want you to figure out, how do you deal with boredom? How do you deal with pleasure? How do you deal with stress? How do you deal with anger or frustration? You know, and the thing about the weed, especially the weed today, is it works really, really well. And so a kid says, boy, I don't have to worry about being bored. All I got to do is smoke weed or hanging out. All I got to do is smoke weed. And so what it does is it's not going to kill them, not going to overdose, you know, but it narrows your life. Right? They get to be 22, 23. And this is where they got all their nurturance, all their interest, all their importance, all their hanging out, all their friends, all their pleasure, all their recreation, you know, all of those things. And they don't have any skills. And the other part is that I was shown with the difference, you know, that the brain that has all the connections and then the big highways later on, is that I don't want to get hardwired in. Marijuana is being a solution to stuff. That's a teenager's job, is to figure some of this stuff out. And for a lot of kids here, the weed works just so well that they don't need to do any of that work. And they end up at 22 or 23 with a brain that has hardwired in, that's changed the biology, and a lack of skills to be able to really give themselves pleasure and stress and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah. Does it have any effects on the teenage brain or adolescent brain compared to an adult brain?
Well, one thing that's my concern is... Yeah, it really affects the development of the brain at that time. You know, what neural connections am I going to make here, right? So that's the big one. Other than that, I think about it with alcohol in a way. I mean, how many kids really have a glass of Cabernet? Not a lot. You know what I mean? When kids do it, they're doing it to get drunk. You know what I mean? That's the whole idea. And the same with the weed. You know, there's a way in which they're just getting loaded and really getting loaded and smoking a whole blunt. And three times today in classes, I think you maybe one of the people brought up crossfading.
Oh, yeah.
You know, okay, well, that's where you're mixing alcohol and weed together, you know. So it's really, it's a terrible mix, but it gets you wasted. You get real, you know what I mean? And so here people aren't even getting high behind it. They're getting wasted behind it, you know? And so it's too available for teenagers. It concerns me as, you know, it's a little bit like the internet. You know, there needs to be some instruction about it. There needs to be some teaching about it so people understand something about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the biggest teaching today really was that, you know, it fires off dopamine. And so your brain says, this good, right? But with a little sophistication, you got to say, but I use the drug to trick the brain to fire off the dopamine. You know, and what you want to keep in mind is it's a trick. It's not the real thing. But people smoke the weed, it fires off the dopamine and it says it's good. So the weed must be good, and not recognize that it's a trick that's going on in the brain. You know, so how else does it affect the teenage brain? You know, teenagers need more dopamine than adults do.
Yeah.
You know, and so they just kind of need to blast their brain with it. And I think kids develop a faster tolerance and a faster dependence. They learn quicker.
Well, why do you say that kids need more dopamine?
It seems to be that kids seem to need more dopamine to feel the dopamine. It's one of the reasons why kids can be really huge risk takers. And stuff, because they need, for whatever reason, they need more of a blast. As you get older, you get a little bit more sensitized to it, so you can kind of get off on some of the smaller pleasures. And really, life is full of lots of small pleasures. The big pleasures, you know, kind of come every once in a while. And so if you dull out that pleasure center of your brain, you're kind of, you know, not getting into those more subtle pleasures and littler pleasures.
Could you mention about how long the marijuana stays in your system when passing the drug test compared to other drugs?
Sure. So one of the things about most drugs is that they get filtered out by the liver. you drink alcohol, you do cocaine or whatever, it gets you high. And then afterwards it goes to the liver and the liver filters it out and does a really good job. It filters out the toxics, the intoxicants that are there. Goes into the kidneys, a little bit more, bladder, and you pee it out. So within 24 hours through the liver, you've managed to clear the drug out of your body. And that's pretty true for pretty much every drug except for marijuana. Marijuana stays in your system and shows up in that pee test for about 3 days that it's still coming out, where all the other drugs got filtered out by the liver. And the other thing is that if you're smoking more than every 3 days, then before that gets totally out of your system, you bring more in. And if you're doing that over a period of time where you're smoking before the other weed got a chance to get out of your system, it builds up in your system. And if you're doing that for a bunch of months, you might not come up with a clean urine analysis test for 30, 45, 60 days. So part of the thing about weed is it lingers in your body for a lot longer. It's one of the reasons I think why you don't feel withdrawal as strongly as you might from some other drug like nicotine or something, because it goes out of your system so quick. So the staying in your system, you know, kind of, then people, well, I can stop a little bit, you know, and it just kind of leaves people under the influence, you know, without knocking them over the head here.
Is it a longer period of time in order to pass a drug test when you eat it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. It's certainly in your system, you know, and I think it might be in your system just as long, but maybe not, because there certainly is a lot of differences when you eat it. It takes longer to come on, but once it comes on, it's way more intense,
yeah,
and it lasts for a longer period of time. And then the other thing that I was trying to teach in the class today that I mentioned in most of the classes is that within the category of drugs, uppers, downers, and all-arounders, marijuana is an all-arounder. You don't really think of THC as being hallucinogenic the way mushrooms or LSD, you know, or some of the other hallucinogenics are. But it is. It's an all-arounder. You just can't smoke enough to trip. Your body reaches a certain level, and then it just can't absorb anymore by smoking it. But eating it, it can absorb all the THC that's in the cookie or brownie or whatever was in that edible. And if there's enough THC there, then you can trip because your body can absorb it all. So I guess it does absorb a lot more eating than smoking. So I wouldn't be surprised if it does stay in your system longer. It's an interesting question. I don't know. It'd be interesting to look it up. But it certainly is a different ballgame eating it than smoking it, you know, particularly around the tripping thing. And the tripping thing can really be very scary for some kids, you know, as you begin to feel separated from yourself and you get scared. Am I going to come back to where I was before? I don't like the walls doing that stuff. Am I going crazy? And then when you get afraid, when you're tripping, it kind of triggers more fear. And it's a little bit of a whirlpool. And so you can have a bad trip that can last for a bunch of hours off of eating it. So does it stay in your system longer? My guess would be yes, but we would ask an expert on that.
Okay. I've had a few friends that said they've eaten like almost a full cookie or brownie,
yeah,
or something, and they were high for like 4 days.
Wow.
And they felt sick.
Yeah.
And even though you can't overdose, it's like you can get yourself sick off of it, and it's...
Well, remember, you're tripping.
Yeah.
So when you say you're high for 4 days, what's happening is that it really has changed the whole psychological thing that's going on. So some of it isn't just a drug. It takes quite a while to come down off of this tripping experience. And like I said, to me, the most tricky thing about that the tripping experience gives you is separating from yourself. It can be very insightful to kind of, you know, look at yourself that way, and it can be really scary. And sometimes people don't come back all the way. They go through a schizophrenic experience, and it can leave you scarred in some ways, or you don't come down after 4 days, or it's a whole other ball game, and it's really playing with the psyche that a lot of other drugs don't do. There are a couple that kids are playing with that I see that came up today. Salvia,
yeah, you brought that one up too.
Yeah, it's more common in the Bay Area. Kids can go into a head shop in Berkeley and buy it legally.
It was here for like a week, and I heard about it.
Yeah.
And then I heard about, first it was just, you know, weed, the norm. And then it was salvia, and then they got Molly.
Yeah.
And then that was going through, and then it finally stopped. Thank goodness, I didn't want my friends to be taking that. And then shrooms are another popular thing, but
yeah.
I didn't really know anything about salvia, so.
Yeah, yeah. So isn't it interesting that weed is in the category of all-arounders, and every other one that you mentioned was an all-arounder? The salvia is an all-arounder. The mushrooms are all-arounder. So it kind of brings it. It can be. I don't think of weed as being a gateway drug necessarily. Although I did a health fair at Berkeley High recently. A girl said, "Yeah, it's a gateway to my refrigerator." You know, but it can be a gateway into exploring psychedelics more. So people then can become more interested in mushrooms or that kind of stuff. And it can be, what I'm seeing with some of the kids here at the high school today that I saw, is it can be a gateway into figuring out that there's a pharmacological solution to my problems. You know what I mean? I feel down, I'm going to take a drug that's going to take care of that. I feel bored, I'm going to take a drug that's going to take... In other words, they're looking for pharmacological solutions all the time, and I think it can be a gateway into that, rather than saying, what can I do about this? How do I deal with this? Rather than looking out there. And I think marijuana is the start on that. But sometimes, I don't think it can be a gateway drug. I think people can just stay with weed, not have to go any further. You can, you know, do it there. And I want to say this, you know, real clearly, marijuana is addictive. And people say, oh, no, it's not addictive. You know, it's interesting in the Bay Area, and I don't see it up here. In the Bay Area, there's MA, Marijuana Anonymous, not Narcotics Anonymous, not Alcoholics Anonymous, it's Marijuana Anonymous. They meet 7 days a week, and there's good size rooms full of people that say, I'm addicted to marijuana, I'm trying to get off. And when I brought it up last year or 2 years ago in Mendocino County, people, marijuana is not a... And I looked out at the audience and says, does nobody have a problem with marijuana here? You know, and that's not true. Sure, people have problems with marijuana. I know wives who say to their husbands, listen, you're stoned all the time. You know, and it's a drag. I don't feel like I'm connecting with you.
Yeah, there's not a problem with them growing it, but when they're smoking it, but
that's
most of them think, yeah, that it's, they're asking if they have a problem with marijuana, like growing it, they don't, but then smoking it, it's...
Yeah. Yeah, and when I referred to it, I didn't mean a problem with growing it.
Yeah.
I meant a problem where you're abusing it, where you're addicted to it, where you're using it under circumstances that you shouldn't be using it, and it's not killing you. But some of what it does is it can steal from your relationships. It can make you more of a loner. It makes you, you know, not want to reach out more. It can introvert people. But I've heard, you know, the argument, you know, where the wife says, you know, you're stoned, I can't talk to you. And the husband says, what are you talking about? I'm listening to every word you're saying. I'll give back to you every word you're saying. What do you mean I'm not here? And the wife will say, well, whatever it is, we're not connecting here, you know. And so it's hard to really understand all of what marijuana is doing. It's quite a complex drug. But one of the things, when I spoke with the doc about it, is that everybody's got brainwave patterns, right? Because we're firing off neurons all the time, and it makes patterns. And you look at a what do they call that, an electrograph, or what was that?
ECG.
Whatever that thing is, where you can see the patterns, right? And so everyone's got brainwave patterns. And part of what happens when two people talk and they start to connect is those brainwave patterns start to, you know, get into a little empathy, a little, you know, alignment there. But it turns out with people who smoke weed, they don't hook up in that kind of way. So what the wife is saying is right. You know, we're not on the same wavelength here. But the husband said, "But I hear you." You know, so it's. But does it interfere with relationships? Yeah, my concern is it interferes with teenage development. Teenagers really need to figure out a bunch of things.
And that's because of how it is kind of messing with the memory part. That, and the storing and, yeah.
Right. So there's two things, right? One concern is around memory. So what marijuana does is it affects the hippocampus, so that you're not pulling up from memory the way you did before, so that things seem fresh and new. That's kind of the glow on the high. So the apple tastes like the first time or whatever. Or you can feel like you think outside the box in a way you do because you're not locked into the memory system. And at the same time, you also forget. So you get into these deep conversations and go, what was I talking about? You know, so it doesn't put stuff into memory. So yes, that's one concern, is that whole learning system. I believe marijuana interferes with learning. Yes, that's one. But the second piece is the dopamine piece. That's the other piece, is when dopamine fires off in the brain, people are interested. I mean, you were with me. I told that story, I think, in every class about when a baby first gets born, right? And the baby gets held, and it fires off dopamine in the baby's brain. And when the dopamine hits the receptor sites, the baby goes, ooh, this good, right? And it's not just this good, this important. And so when dopamine fires off in the brain, it's a sign that this is important to me, or this is like mother's milk, or like being held, or whatever. It has some real interest in and need for me in that way, right? And it satisfies certain things when it fires off. My concern is that what kids need to do is figure out how to do that. Where is my juice? What is important to me? What do I want to say? This good. You know, and there's so many things in the world to figure out, you know, and what's good for one person isn't necessarily good for another person, you know. But that's part, getting in touch with those pleasures and desires and what's important to me and all that stuff, that's dopamine. And that's what I want to see kids do. And smoking the weed fires off the dopamine and satisfies it, so that I no longer have to figure out, if I'm bored, I smoke the weed. If I want some pleasure, I smoke the weed. If I want to hang out with friends, we smoke weed. I want to take care of frustration, I want to take care of stress, I smoke the weed. But during teenage time, I need to figure out, how do I deal with stress? What does turn me on? What does interest me? How do I want to earn a living? Where are my pleasures? Where are my interests? All that's dopamine. And that's what I think teenagers need to do at that time, is figure out those things. And the weed interferes with that. Particularly people that really like it, then they don't have to do any of that work. They don't have to figure out any of the frustration, boredom, interest, pleasure. I don't have to go to any of that. All I got to do is fire up.
And a test comes cleaner when the
yes.
system.
Yeah.
Do you have long term effects with memory, messing up your memory, or? Retaining information and storing it?
That's a good question. For the most part, you recover. Okay. So in other words, in the future, with your hippocampus, if it's clean of weed, then I think it pretty much goes back to doing the work. But during that time that you were using, no, that information didn't get integrated. And so what I've, and our parents is at Berkeley High say to me, well, my kid's getting A's and B's and C's. So what if he's smoking weed? He's still doing okay. And part of what I say to them is, that's not all the teenagers are learning. Teenagers need to figure out, how do I sit there and do an hour's worth of homework? How do I deal with frustration? Where am I? I'm no longer doing Legos or dolls. So where are my pleasures now? What am I interested out there? These are the things that kids need to figure out at this point. And the thing around memory is that they're not learning. I'm not putting into my memory bank how I dealt with frustration. I'm not putting into my memory bank how I'm finding pleasure, or because I'm doing this. Okay, and it works for the time that it works, but nothing is integrating. Just like it's not pulling up from memory, the hippocampus is not putting stuff into memory either. And so what I find is people that start smoking weed at 14, 15, 16, or maybe even earlier, that kind of is where their emotional development stops. So they get to be 25 years old, and man, they have no patience. They get frustrated easily. They don't know what they want. They don't, you know what I mean? It's quite a difficult thing later on, even though it seems like it works now. And it's because there isn't any growth that's going on there. That to me is memory. also is learning how to do things and how to deal with a lot of my emotional, you know, things that are going on. And I find that they don't learn it. They're 25 years old with emotional maturity of a 13-year-old.
So when you say that, like, if when you said that marijuana affects, like, learning.
Yes.
Yes. Kids are still getting A's, B's, and C's.
Yes.
Would you say that kids who more regularly smoke pot are less likely to go to college than kids who don't? Or would you say, like, marijuana is a factor in kids wanting to attend college or actually attending college?
Well, statistics will say that it doesn't. The kids that are smoking weed are attending less college than those that are not. But I don't necessarily agree with that with what I see, because also I think that kids can be naturally curious, you know, especially kids that go to college. They want to find out about the world. And so here's this weed around. I want to find out. I want to, you know, what's going on. So I don't think that it's necessarily preventing them from going to college. But if it satisfies them in so many ways that it just, and that's what I was hearing today, not only does it satisfy their pleasure and their search for anything new, it can also satisfy how they earn a living up here. So it can satisfy the whole works. It satisfies their career, their pleasures, their you know, it just works on all those levels. And so they just get involved in it. And to me, it doesn't kill them, but it narrows their world. You know, it narrows their world and it narrows their emotional capacity to deal. You know, and I was so sad to hear this kid say, this is the way I take, this is my medicine. I love this drug. I'm in love with this drug, you know, and that's sad.
And do you think that, like, is a problem with kids today? Do you think that's, like, a cause of how kids are today? Is because of marijuana and the effect that it has on them?
For some. No, for a lot of them, it isn't. For a lot of them, it's just part of their life. Smoke a little weed, not a big deal, like alcohol or whatever. But for some kids, it really goes deeper than that. And oftentimes, what I'm seeing in Oakland, you know, in more the inner city stuff, is that the more marginalized kids, and what I mean by marginalized is the kids that don't really feel like they belong in that way. A lot of times it's black kids or, you know, there's a white school or whatever, or the kids that grew up in homes that were more chaotic, they didn't feel safe, or they grew up in homes where they didn't get loved up very much. They're more likely to go to the weed to get that satisfied. And that's true in learning also. I think that if kids had chaotic homes, they go into the place in the brain, that reptilian part that's into safety and defense, right? And then the next place is that mammalian brain where they go into where they want to feel connected, you know, where the mammals stopped eating their young, right? So we start to, you know, raise our young, right? So then I want to feel connected. And then I can learn. Then I'm ready for the prefrontal cortex. But for a lot of kids, the weed can take care. They're stuck in either the protection place, that anger place, or they're stuck in the place of, man, I didn't get any love. Where am I going to get that from? You know what I mean? And the weed can tend to satisfy that as well. So I think it hurts more the more marginalized kids and pushes them out. And those are the kids that don't go to college. Mm-hmm. Those are the kids often that don't graduate high school, where a lot of the kids, where the homes were solid, they do get away from smoking weed and still not being alienated and going to college. So I think it unfairly affects the more marginalized kids.
So how would you fix that? How would you make sure that those kids who would be affecting don't get affected like that?
Well, here's my thing, but it's got to be on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. My piece on it is I think people need education. I think people, so that a good example for me is cigarettes. I don't want cigarettes to be illegal. Mm-hmm. People want to smoke a cigarette. I think they have a right to smoke a cigarette, you know, even though they know all of the consequences and stuff. But what went along with the cigarettes was, number one, education. You guys know so much more about cigarettes. I mean, I went to school in the Bronx at Vander Childs High School in Bronx. I come down from the steps at the end of the day at 3:00. There was a Marlboro truck and a Newport truck there. And they'd hand out two packs to us. A little two-pack of Marlboros or a little two-pack of Newports. Oh, you need matches? Here's some matches. You know, that's where the mentality was back then. But now things have changed. We've really learned a lot. So I think as a result of that learning, less people are smoking. But it isn't just the learning. I think also some of the laws that happen in California. All of a sudden it becomes uncomfortable because I can't smoke with everybody else. I can't sit in the classroom and smoke. I can't sit in the movie theater and smoke. Oh, God, now I got to go over here. Now it's a pain in the neck, you know, or the insurance company is going to charge me more money because they know that it's more damaging to, you know what I mean? So you put all these things together and people can make wiser choices. That's what I would like to see with weed. I would like to see a lot of education there. I'd like to see the cannabis people, the pro-cannabis movement, be able to say, yeah, and let's not give it to teenagers because it's not okay there. Teenage brain is different than an adult. Let's make the separation there and do the education. You guys aren't getting a clear message from adults. Are you getting a message that marijuana bad, don't do it? You know, you're not getting that. And part of it is that people don't really know. Well, you know, I smoked a little weed when I was young, or it's okay to smoke with some weed. You know, and you guys that are at school, you can see that some, and us as teachers, you can see some people are really affected by marijuana, you know, where you don't see it as much in the adult world in that kind of way. So I think education is one really important piece in there. Another is legislation. To be able to make some sense out of this marijuana thing, I don't think it should be illegal. How can we put that in this category? And to have so many people arrested for marijuana to be put in jail, to me, is a crime. Actually, I think it's a crime to put any drug addict in jail. Here a person has a problem with crack cocaine and their life is falling apart and you're going to make a criminal out of them to boot and just throw them in jail. People need help. People need direction. People need education.
They're just
going to
keep doing what they're doing when they get out.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting educated on what they did wrong.
Right. And so in juvenile hall, and I go into juvenile hall and I talk, and these kids are coming back over and over again. What the kids in juvenile hall say is, I can't wait to get out so I can roll myself a fat one and get loaded. And I say to them, but you can go back to, you come up with a dirty urine analysis test, you can go back to juvenile hall. You're going to take that risk. Oh, I'll cheat on the UA test. I'll get somebody else's urine, or I'll get a thing. And so part of what it is I'm going to risk going back to jail, but I ain't going to give up my weed. You know, that's how attached they are to it, without anything seeing a downside to it. And it's sad, you know. And so one of the things I do is go into juvenile hall, and at least there they're clean and sober for a few days. They're in a crisis. Now's the time to do some intervention and do some teaching. Although I must say, a lot of the kids here today at Laytonville High really paid attention and listened. I didn't see it where at a lot of other places, people, man, you're going to say anything bad about marijuana, I don't want to hear it. You know, and they just kind of turn off. Not here. People were really open to hearing the whole works on it, you know, and to understand that it's complex. It's not all good. It's not all black. It's not black and white, you know, but can it be tricky? Hell yeah. And it makes it twice as tricky for teenagers. So I think education is one of the things. The other thing is that for those kids, I would want to find dopamine sources for them. What turns you on? Yeah. Is it lacrosse? Is it literature? Is it getting into radio? Is it, I don't know, but to be able to find things that do engage kids and does fire off dopamine. So on the one hand, it's education. But on the other hand, is we got to make life interesting for these kids. And they're walking through classes bored silly. And some of these kids are not interested. Some of these kids would really get off on going to a woodshop class or a mechanics class. And all those are getting cut out. You know, it's like, you got to go to college. You got to do, you know, this thing. And it's a lot of pressure on people. But those kids, I would say education, a little restriction on there, and to find the other things and help them to get engaged. And God, they're teenagers. There must be stuff that they're going to be engaged with.
Yeah, really.
You know? there's a way in which weed does open up things in the mind, does kind of show you other things that your mind is capable of. But so it's kind of like a finger pointing towards something, you know, like it let you know then, oh boy, I wish I would have had this in the eighth grade, that there's other possibilities that are there. The issue with it to me is that people don't end up going to the thing that it's pointing to. They end up falling in love with their finger. You know what I'm saying? It reminds me a little bit of Alan Watts when he talked about religion. And he said, you know, religion is just a tool to have a relationship with God here. But the problem is people end up falling in love with the religion and they don't go to God. You know, well, what I see with marijuana is they smoke some weed and it opens up some things in their mind. And instead of going for that, they end up sucking their finger all day long. They end up smoking the weed all day long instead of going after what it's pointing to. You know what I'm saying? So, and you're right. So that's the problem in eighth grade, is you might not have worked any of that stuff through. It might have made eighth grade better for you and easier for you. But, you know, in some ways, part of what life is about is pain. And discomfort, you know, it's part of the deal. And if we take something that cuts that out, you can't cut that out without cutting out other parts as well. And to start young doing that, boy, that's rough.
So yeah. If you had to pick one, which would you say would be worse for adolescents, alcohol or marijuana?
Well, it's a good question, and it's tough. I think the alcohol is worse in terms of accidents. For one, it's easier because it really affects motor skills and everything else. Number two, I really am concerned about alcohol when it comes to girls, because I think it makes girls very vulnerable and can turn really nice guys into a bit of predators, you know, because you put that outer layer of your brain to sleep and a lot of the impulses can come out a lot easier, right? So a lot of that stuff's going on with alcohol that I don't see with weed. So I have concerns around the immediacy of the dangers of alcohol. Also, binge drinking definitely affects the brain. It's really hurting brain cells in that kind of way, where marijuana isn't having that deep an effect on the brain. The problem is that I think weed is more subtle. I mean, how many kids do you see going to school in the morning and knocking off a fifth of bourbon? You know, then you think, boy, there's a sickie for you, you know. But nobody thinks anything about somebody smoking a blunt on the way to school in the morning, you know. And so in some ways, the weed can get in there where the alcohol has its place. You know what I mean? And so people can kind of, oh, well, alcohol, that's a problem, but weed, no problem. And so in that way, I think it's a much more subtle drug, but it can get in there a lot deeper than the alcohol. And for some people, though, it's alcohol that does them in. What's worse for the body? Alcohol. It does the liver in. It's doing stuff to your digestive tract. I mean, it's taken a big toll in that kind of way. Where the weed, you don't have a lot of hangovers. So you can bring it in more easily and integrate it more easily into your life. That is a problem for teenagers. So which is worse? On the immediate thing, I would say the alcohol. In the long term, unless somebody becomes an alcoholic, you know, which they very well can be, I think the weed, you know, really gets in there in a way that can affect people's lives. But you can die from an overdose of alcohol. You can't die from an overdose of weed. Mm-hmm. You know, alcohol is a much more dangerous drug in that way, especially if you then mix alcohol with another downer, then you can die. You can die from an overdose, or you can just die from alcohol poisoning in that kind of way. Weed, not so. But that doesn't mean that it leaves it so that weed is fine. It isn't fine. It's got a lot of issues, but they're way different than alcohol. And in some ways, that's why I'm answering your question, saying I think in some ways a lower degree of immediacy in terms of concern with weed than with alcohol. Yeah, I think alcohol is a pretty destructive drug. But one of the other feel-good drugs in the brain is serotonin. And serotonin is a different feel-good from dopamine. When serotonin fires off in your brain, you get a feeling of well-being. So what do I mean by a feeling of well-being? I mean that, well, I feel good about my life. You know, I'm not happy all the time, but I feel good about who I am and what I'm doing and the work that I'm doing. I have a good relationship with myself. I feel good about myself. That can give you a feeling of well-being. People in my life love me. That gives me a feeling of well-being. Knowing that I got a place to sleep at night. Knowing that I'm able to earn a living. Knowing that I can entertain myself with different interests and stuff. This all gives me a feeling of well-being in my life. It's different than dopamine. Dopamine is just pleasure. Mm-hmm. If you got some money, you can buy some dopamine. You can buy a good meal. You could go to a movie. You could buy some good music. I mean, you could buy a person, really, if you wanted to with money. So you can always buy the pleasure. But once the pleasure is gone, what are you left with? What are you carrying around with you regularly? That's that serotonin. That's that how do I feel about myself? That's that feeling of well-being. What I said with the 12th graders was around sex. If you have sex with somebody else, not sex by yourself, what's left after the sex is over? And the answer is the other person is there. The sex part is the dopamine part. The other person is the relationship part. That's the serotonin part. You see, it's like the difference between pleasure and happiness. Mm-hmm. And there's a big difference between the two, and people don't make that separation. It's kind of like, how can I go from one pleasure to the other? So, you know, the way I ended the talk in one of the classes, were you in the class for The Wizard of Oz? Yeah. It's a great metaphor. So it's about this girl, Dorothy, who gets blown away from her home in Kansas, right? She ends up in some crazy land, Oz, right? And she sees these munchkins and says to them, listen, I want to go home. I want to go back to Kansas. Oz is fine, but I want to go back to Kansas. How do I get home? And the munchkins said, we don't know how you get home. We can't tell you. But if anybody knows, it's the wizard. So you follow this yellow brick road. It'll take you to the wizard, and the wizard might be able to help you get home. So she goes on the road and she runs into a scarecrow who doesn't have a brain. I want to have a brain. I want to be able to think great things, do great things. She says, I don't know how you get a brain, you know, but they tell me that the wizard might be able to get me home. Maybe the wizard can get your brain. Come with me. Then they run into a tin man, doesn't have a heart. I want to have a heart. I want to be able to love. I want to be able to feel. I want to feel connected. I want a heart. We don't know how you get a heart, but maybe the wizard might be able to get your heart. Come along with us. And then they run into a lion who doesn't have courage. I want to go out in the world and get courage. Well, we don't know how you get. Come with us. So here are these beings that are on this road to get a brain, to get a heart, to get courage, to get home. It's a metaphor for people on the road to get a life, right? They get to the top of the hill and they look down and there's the Emerald City. Then there's the whole thing with the monkeys. Forget the monkeys. The monkey thing is weird. But so they're up there and they look down and they see the Emerald City. But between them and the Emerald City was poppy fields in the movie. And it actually snows a little bit in the movie. And they go off into the poppy fields, get a big smile on their face, and they go to sleep. And here they are asleep in the poppy fields. Finally, Glinda, the good witch, comes along and says, listen, you want to get a brain? You want to get a heart? You want to get courage? You want to get home? Then get the hell out of the poppy fields, get on the road, and go to Oz, okay? And there's a way in which up here and in Northern California, you guys are walking through fields of poppies. But it's not poppies, it's marijuana buds, you know, but it's just everywhere. And what scares me is some people go off into the poppy fields, into the marijuana buds, and they get off the road. You know, and part of what I want is you got to stay on the road. You got to put together a life here. Don't get lost in those poppy fields. And it's easy for a lot of young people to get lost. It's easy for anybody to get lost in those poppy fields, you know, especially if the drug really works well. And you see, for some people, it's not a big deal. But for others, man, they love it. They love that it takes care of their anger and their pleasure and their ADD and their, you know, it just, so it becomes their medicine. And you know what? You take medicine when you're sick. I don't want you to be sick. I want you to heal yourself here. I don't want you to be sick with your boredom or sick with your depression, you know, or sick with your lack of interest or whatever. I want you to make that stuff better and do something about it.
Find an alternative.
Find an alternative. because the drug works. The trouble is it wears off, and then you got more problems than you did before. You didn't reuptake the dopamine, so now you feel kind of burnt out because you don't have any dopamine there. Your hippocampus got nailed, so now you're a little bit dumb. You know, the part that slowed down the cerebellum, now when it wears off, you become more ADD than you were before. And so I feel more depressed than I was before I started. I'm more ADD, okay? And I'm now a little bit dumber because my hippocampus isn't working up to par. But does it work for the short period of time? Yes. So what do you do about that? That's a hard thing. When somebody knows I can get relief just like that, I don't want to do the work. I want the relief. And if it happens when you're young, that's what gets hardwired in. Yeah, I feel very strong. I mean, I'm not against marijuana, but I feel very strongly around marijuana in teenagers. They need some education around this. It is not all good. And so do the adults, because the parents don't know it either. And you want to know something else? I don't have a problem with parents growing weed. I can totally understand that. Even a teacher. You don't make enough money here in Mendocino County. Why not grow some plants and make an extra $5,000 or $10,000 to be able to feed my family and to do what I need to do? But somehow the parents feel like it compromises them, that now I can't say anything to my kids because I'm growing weed, or what kind of message is there to the kids? But I'll tell you something. In St. Helena, people are growing wine, or in Napa, people are growing wine. And they don't feel like it's hypocritical to tell their kids, I don't want you drinking alcohol now. That's not hypocritical. And they can be growing the wine at the same time, because it's different for teenagers than it is for adults. But somehow or other, we're not making that distinction when it comes to weed. And I think part of it is everybody wants to make money off of weed. And it's a shame that people just want to make money off of teenagers as well. You guys are a big market, man. Down in the Bay Area, whew, wow. A lot of people are making money off of weed, you know, and I'm not knocking it. I'm not, you know, but at the same time, man, it's got some issues, especially 15 to 20% THC. And the parents are still thinking, what's the big deal? That's a kick-ass drug. The last question here, what do you mean by magic is in the brain, not in the herb? What I mean is the herb triggers off the dopamine. The dopamine is the magic. That's the thing that makes you feel alive. But you already have that. That's what you're carrying with you. What you want to figure out is how do I get in touch with that? How do I get in touch with my own magic?
Well, thank you very much for being here. That was certainly a very big craft course. And I don't smoke weed, but I never have. And I don't really have the want to either.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I don't know a lot about it, and that just kind of overwhelmed me with information.
Aha.
It was really good, though.
Good.
Yes, thank you for coming and speaking to the school, too, because I was glad that the pot smokers in the school got to learn about it.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't there with my class, which has most of the pot smokers in it, I was glad that they got to hear it, and they were talking about it afterwards, and they really enjoyed you talking to them, and I enjoyed learning more about it. Talk about it all the time and smoke it all the time, so I didn't know much about it, and
oh, that's great. See, and that is part of what I wanted to do, is I want them to talk about it. You know, I want them to get into a dialogue about it with some of this other information, you know. So that's great. I'm really glad that they were talking about it when they left. That was the idea. Because it deserves a lot of conversation. And even this teaching, 50, this is a much bigger conversation, you know, and this whole thing around getting life and figuring out what's really important. Those are big conversations, you know, that take a period of time to really do. And people need to hang in it. And then to be able to talk about weed. And to be able to, because they're not really willing to say, well, here's some of the downside. I do feel kind of burnt out. I do feel kind of duller. I do, you know, I mean, there's things that are happening that if there isn't that kind of dialogue, nobody's given voice to that. All they're talking about is how high they got and how what's the different ways to grow the weed and everything, instead of really talking about what's the impact of it on my life. And so I'm really glad to hear that people were talking when they went out. That's what I want to happen, so that people can begin to just kind of dialogue this thing, get off of the all good, all bad stuff and talk about weed. in a real way, instead of in this hyped up way, you know. And it's not easy to do that because the damn stuff works and it makes so much money that it's got a lot of hype that's there.
Where would you recommend to find more information about weed?
Good question. Well, some of it isn't to necessarily go to other places. Some of it is to really talk more deeply between the parents and the kids about weed, to be able to see what information is really there with one another. But to go on and to get some knowledge and more information, number one, this sounds like a corny website, but I really like it. It's called Partnership for Drug-Free America. Partnership for Drug, and what it is it's kind of like a portal into a whole lot of areas, and they're not judgmental about it. They're really teaching the science of it. And so I think that's one place is Partnership for Drug-Free America. There's a book by the name of Tim, by a guy by the name of Tim Cermak, who lives in Marin. He's been around a long time, and he wrote a book called Marijuana, What's a Parent to Believe, that I think is a really good book on it. The other thing is for parents, I really would suggest they talk to one another and start to level with one another on this stuff, because nobody's talking openly about it. So in some ways, it isn't even a matter of going for information from somewhere else. It's a matter of really sharing the information here and exploring it and going deeper. And I wish it was taught more at school. I wish we, and like I said, sex education has gotten there. You really are getting straight up sex education. I wish it got to that place with drugs, so you get that straight up education with it. And right now, we haven't gotten there. And I don't think people see it as a crisis. I don't know whether you guys see it as a crisis, but it concerns me when you have so many kids here or adults here that the whole life is wrapped around the weed. The pleasure, the work, the company, the time, the everything is wrapped around this weed. Get a life.
That's all for this month's edition of You Speaks Out. We heard Maddie and Colton of Laytonville High School interviewing Ralph Cantor. Ralph is an educator making presentations to schools and communities, and he may be reached via email at rcantor@aol.com. Laytonville Healthy Start Coalition's Drug-Free Communities Project is proud to sponsor this month's You Speaks Out. Our environmental prevention strategies in the community, also known as EPIC, is funded by the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Through our organization and coalition, we are working toward reducing youth substance abuse through a variety of strategies in the Laytonville community. If you are interested in learning more about our efforts, please contact Laytonville Healthy Start at 707-984-8089 or email jamashields@pacific.net. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. Up on the web right now is Ralph Cantor's presentation at the public forum on marijuana and the adolescent brain. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. You Speaks Out is aired on the first Sunday of each month. Our next show will be in 5 weeks. That's July 7th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in July.